Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Padres B writer for the Union Tribune. I'm joined by the Union Tribune sports editor, Ryan Finley. I am in Boston for the Padres' first road series of the season, Friday through Sunday against the Red Sox. Ryan, wow, 2-4, first homestand. Where would you like to start?
You know, I think I'd like to start with the starting pitching. That's something that has been a storyline, I think, since spring training and has obviously been a big narrative here in the first two series. I think that there was more to like in this second series than there was in the first one. I think we should start with the most recent game. Nick Pivetta looked like Nick Pivetta yesterday. And what do you know? The Padres won a game.
Yeah, I would take it that four of the six starts you can live with, right? Not Nick Pivetta's first one, not Germán Márquez. You can Nick Pivetta's second one, and I should say you can. I think you can with Walker Buehler. No, it wasn't. It was like right in that borderline, right? Four innings, three runs. It was like, oh, right there. You can live, obviously, with Randy Vasquez, Michael King. I'll tell you what, huge sigh of relief for the Padres that Nick Pivetta came back and had five shutout innings. Few too many strikeouts, few too many foul balls for him to get the chance to go the full six innings there. But I thought it was that was Nick Pivetta, and that just was a – oh, because no matter what Randy Vasquez does, no matter what Michael King does, if you've got Walker Buehler and Germán Márquez question marks, and then a question mark with Nick Pivetta, that was borderline, you know, disaster sort of hanging over your head.
Yeah. Let's talk about Pivetta and Buehler. These are two guys, Márquez and Buehler. These are two guys who made their Padres debuts in the series against the Giants. I would say sort of a mixed bag there, but enough to like. What's your takeaway on both of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, my initial thing on Buehler is like, okay, you know, we'll see for next time. It wasn't terrible, but I mean, it wasn't good. He's got to figure out a way to pitch better than that. Those outings happen, not going to necessarily based on what I've seen, what I've heard. Okay, it was a bad outing. Let's see what the next one is. That was my takeaway. Germán Márquez, you're not seeing a lot. You're not hearing a lot that makes you go, oh, okay, this guy could be a viable option in the rotation time after time. But again, first start, let's see the next one. What I can tell you is the bottom line, you're going to get to see at least a few. These are veteran pitchers that there has to be a belief that they can figure this out because, like, otherwise, like, then why have them? So you've got to give them a little chance to figure it out. And then if not, then you've got to move on. And the Padres have some options there.
They sure do. And those options could be coming to San Diego in what, Kevin, 3 weeks or a month? I mean, whether it's Musgrove or Waldron, I mean, they still have to make a decision on Matt Waldron. What is he? And then obviously Griffin Canning could be here, what, late May, early June? Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, I think that you're probably at this point, there really isn't any way to tell on Joe. So I'll just go with my gut here that it's, you know, this month, Matt Waldron, decision has to be made. I'm virtually certain he will pitch games for the Padres. So that they can decide whether they're going to subject him to waivers or, man, no, this is that middle of 2024 Matt Waldron. We're going to keep this guy. And then maybe Joe mid-May and then Griffin Canning maybe mid-late May. So there will, you know, man, they can only hope that it's the proverbial problem of too many starting pitchers. But let's not get carried away.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, that's a really compelling question at this point, which is, you know, is it worth taking a risk? And I think it's a risk by putting Matt Waldron back into your starting rotation, as sort of feast or famine as he can be, and getting rid of Germán Márquez? Or do you stick with Márquez and hope that he reverts to whoever he was as a big league pitcher before 2023? You know, he hasn't been much since then.
No, just awful. And we're not talking about Coors Field awful. We're talking about awful everywhere. But again, veteran pitcher who shows you these flashes, and there are stories of guys who were given up on. Adrian Hauser, who, yes, the Padres finally got to yesterday, but not really. That's a guy who last year played for three different teams, if you count spring training, and was given up on. There are stories like that, and you do see flashes. So, yes, you give him a chance. Look, how they, I don't know if hope is the right word, but I bet you what they're thinking is, look, in our next two starts, Herman Marquez is going to tell us. And then right. that is going to be the timing for Matt Waldron to come back.
Yep. Sometimes these decisions make themselves, you know, mm-hmm. like if Herman Marquez pitches well, maybe he gets a little bit of a stay of execution. And if he doesn't, well, you know, you have to make a decision on Matt Waldron anyway. Maybe Marquez is the corresponding move.
That's it. And if not, and they're all pitching well, then okay. You know, I haven't looked at the schedule. You find a way to get six a couple times through. You find a way that Marquez goes to the bullpen for, you know, as a long man for a little while so that you can see what Waldron's doing. Are you piggybacking them? So you can see there's all sorts of solutions if somehow both Buehler and Marquez are pitching well enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, the Padres finally hit after really struggling for most of the season. They break through yesterday and beat the Giants. You know, you wrote today not only about Jackson Merrill really helping to carry them, but just sort of what a feeling of relief it is that sort of everything finally broke through. How important was it for them to really not only win, but score a bunch of runs in doing it?
Yeah. I figured I was going to go like real heavy all Jackson Merrill because it looked like the Padres for the first time in, I don't know, like 30 years were going to win a game in which they scored multiple runs and had no RBIs. Because of Jackson Merrill scoring from first in the first inning on a infield single and error. And then a grounder. What was it? Were the bases loaded? Well, yeah. Xander Bogaerts hit somebody home on a error, and so they were up 2-0 and they had not technically driven in a run. Mm-hmm. So and then you get the big eighth inning. We actually got a run where Gavin Sheets drove in a run in the sixth, I believe. And then you had the big eighth inning that featured the two-run homer, a lot of walks by the Giants reliever, Buehler. And yes, guys taking walks, not chasing. Guys like Sheets and Laureano driving the ball. Sheets had not been. Laureano has been. The Padres putting the ball in play, which, you know, they did actually remarkably well considering the quality of pitchers they faced. And so then yesterday, it just sort of came to fruition that, look, 10 hits, great. First time with double-digit hits. I believe first time with more than 7 hits, actually. So, nice. You can talk for 3, 4, 5 games about it'll all come together. We just got to stay on our approach. And yes, some people had bad at-bats, but there were a lot of good at-bats against good pitchers, and it didn't go the Padres' way. And you can talk about that and all that, but you eventually need results. So it was good for them to get results.
To me, the guys who I worry about, Kevin, aren't the guys with a decade's worth of production in the big leagues. I mean, you know Manny Machado is going to hit, you know, enough. You know Tatis is going to hit enough. It's guys like Gavin Sheets. It's the catching situation. You know, those are the guys that worry me. And to see Gavin Sheets break out a little bit yesterday, you know, I think that that's a good thing for them. You need your first baseman to hit. I mean, that's one of those baseball basics, right? And, you know, he was 0-for until yesterday. So I think it's good to see him do that. Are we any closer to seeing sort of who is option 1, 2, or 3 among the right-handed hitting, quote-unquote, bench guys, whether that's Castellanos or France or Miguel Andujar?
Yeah, I don't think we are. And that's something that as I, you know, I did an item where I talked about the makeup of the lineup yesterday, and I put all six lineups in, and you kind of look at it and you go, and you think about that day where Laureano sat because Craig Stammen wanted to get both Andujar and Castellanos in there, kind of get them going. It's kind of like there is a little bit of a log jam there. I don't think Laureano is a part of that log jam because Laureano is a everyday player, but you do have the then the other he I'm saying he's right-handed then like Castellanos, like Andujar, like France. So behind him there's this log jam of how do we get first base? Okay, well Sheets can sit against left-handers, but then we got 70% right-handers that you face, and so how do you get everybody in? And oh yeah, left-handed Sungmon Song is coming back perhaps as soon as Pittsburgh, which is starts on Monday in Pittsburgh. And so you know, who goes? Well, I don't believe it's going to be Andujar or Castellanos, and I don't think it's going to be Bryce Johnson because you need an extra outfielder. So, gosh, I don't know. Unless Ty France hits, you know, gets four extra base hits here somehow in three games in Boston, I don't see how he's long for this roster.
Can Ty France catch? That's my question.
is it emergency catcher at one point?
Is it too soon or is it too late to be wondering if Luis Camposano is long for this roster?
Great question. And it could have been asked at any time over the last couple years, but now that he was essentially just given the job in spring, the backup job in spring, they seem to have settled on a pretty 60-40 split. Either way, whichever way you want to phrase that question, I still don't know what the answer is of how long the leash is. What are your options afterward? Again, do you then push it up to, okay, he's only going to catch 1.5 times through the rotation, you know, however that works out, right? He catches for Michael King and then kind of that's it or something like that. Maybe catches a day game after a night game for Fermin, and it's just more like a true backup, and you're leaning on Fermin, who he thinks hitting like 144 or 114.
Right.
Whatever 1-for-14 is, I think is what Fermin is. So it's not like he's on fire either. What we're looking at is we're holding Campusano's past against him, right?
Yes.
Because he's really not that much worse than Fermin at the plate right now, though Fermin is hitting the ball better. Camposano strikes out or rolls over to the left side. So I really don't know what the leash is on him, but it certainly is like one of the big stories early in the season.
Yeah. My question there is, you know, when will Blake Hunt be 100% healthy and good to go? And how much would Blake Hunt push him? I mean, to me, he's the guy who has, you know, a little bit of major league experience. He's a guy who they know, who they drafted, who they traded to Tampa and then got back this offseason. You know, to me, man, that seems to me like one of the only reasonable options in the minors, unless you want to go, you know,
they
get
really
somebody
like
off the street.
They really like Rodolfo Duran, but you're correct about Blake Hunt. They really like him. And by the way, has been called up to the majors I don't know how many times, but has never played.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, but looks the part, and and they do like him. And there was a little bit of talking before he, I think it was oblique. They had a rash of obliques before he was downed in spring training. There was a little bit of talk about he or Duran could have pushed Campusano, but that turned out to just not be the case at all. Like I said, who do you have to replace him?
Right. Who's out there? Yeah, Kevin, you're in Boston now. A Red Sox home opener tomorrow morning, San Diego time. Is this game going to be played? I guess we'll start there. What does the weather look like? You look like you're bundled up. what's this whole experience going to be like, do you think?
Well, I think everybody, including players on the Padres, are looking forward to a home opener at Fenway Park, the historic ballpark where you know that they get, you know, it's tradition. So I think that's going to be neat. It looks like we're going to have cold but dry the next 2 days. And then And I would trade this because that stinks, because Sunday's a getaway day and it looks like it's going to rain on Sunday. So could be talking about some canceled flights for those of us who don't have charter flights and getting to Pittsburgh and all that. But hey, get two or three without rain when it was looking like snow with the original forecast, you know, 6 or 7 days ago. But I think it'll be a look when you get the schedule. You see that the first road game, the first road series is Fenway Park. It gets you a little jolt. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
That is very cool. Michael King starting Friday's opener against Sonny Gray. Michael King, if I'm not mistaken, grew up a Red Sox fan, did he not?
He did. He grew up going to games. He grew up, obviously, in New England. I'm trying to think, though. Something in my mind is telling me. I have these little alarms. I get older where you don't actually remember things, but you remember that you used to remember something. And like maybe he was a Yankees fan all along or something. But went to BU, which I passed on the way here. And no, he went to BC. He went to BC. I passed BU. See, there I am showing how old I am. Big New England guy. Though he says he's a big California guy now. So
I would be too for what he's making. Jackson Merrill grew up a big Red Sox fan as well, if I'm not
mistaken. Huge and crushed here last time. I remember the wonderful stories. His mom out in center field, he had a home run out to her. He pointed to us where he used to sit, or where he sat one time behind a pole. He loves Dustin Pedroia, was his favorite player. Now he's teammates with Manny Machado. Red Sox fans will never forget Manny Machado. I wrote about that last spring. Jackson, man, crushes on the East Coast, or he did his rookie year, and loves this place.
Yep. And then we've got Saturday. It's Randy Vasquez versus Early for the Red Sox. Connolly Early is his name.
What a Red Sox name. I was just looking up all the players who've won multiple Reds World Series rings with the Red Sox. And you go back, most of them are in the early 1900s, obviously, right? Big famous gap between their World Series appearances. And Connolly Early looks like a guy who could have won a World Series with them in 1912.
Absolutely. And then Sunday, it's interesting matchup, I think. Walker Buehler, a Red Sox at the end of last season, going up against Ranger Suarez, the longtime Philadelphia Philly, the left-hander there. So a big series there. Kevin, I'm going to get you out on this. You have a story that we'll post at some point here this afternoon about Xander Bogaerts and his return to Boston. This isn't his first time back there with the Padres. He was hurt, though, the last time. How is he perceived in Boston, and what did he tell you about his time there?
Well, I mean, the guy was huge here. Like, I feel like I say it all the time, but I want to impress it on people because he's been something of a shell of himself with the Padres, right, if we're being honest. Five All-Star appearances. Four Silver Sluggers, two World Series rings, leader of the team. I talked to Rafael Devers this week as if I didn't know he was going to lavish praise on his former teammate and friend and, you know, the guy who was the Red Sox leader. But he called Xander an historic Red Sox. Xander here is big time. I'll embed a video from the last time we were here when he was hurt. And so he really got to soak in the ovation that he got and everything. And it was, you know, there are ovations like Luis Arraez got a nice one, a neat video tribute, but it didn't, you know, when he came back to San Diego, but it didn't compare. I mean, Xander got a legit standing ovation from the fans at Fenway Park last time. It was pretty neat to see a player who was a big deal for a decade in a town where, you know, they're kind of crazy about their sports and the Red Sox. So, but I have some comments from Xander on that too. I mean, you know, Xander feels the hunger of the Padres fans as well.
Sure. Kevin, I'm so excited that you get to watch, baseball in Fenway Park on their opening day. I know that you're over opening days. I get it, but tomorrow should be pretty special.
This helps. You know, a lot of times as a team or as a beat writer, you do as many as like three opening days. depending on what the schedule is. And it's like, okay, right? I love America and flyovers and giant flags and lining up on the, that's great, but are we done? But that's what I mean by looking at the schedule and going, oh, Fenway Park opening day? Oh, this is great. I'm so excited. And then I get to go to one of my favorite modern ballpark, right? There's Wrigley and Fenway, and then there's the modern ballparks. And my favorite modern ballpark is next week, and that's PNC Park in Pittsburgh.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.